everyone, and welcome to Dark Natter, the podcast where we select a prime piece of dark fiction and boil it until its flesh falls off. Do you like that one?
I think, have you not used that before?
Don't think so.
Oh, I bet it,
does it ring? Oh, no.
Maybe you just say it a lot.
Yeah.
I'm always boiling.
Yeah, you know what it is. I think Thingy says it, Lo Pan says it in Big Trouble in Little China.
Catch them, boil them until their flesh falls off.
Maybe I've just seen that a lot.
I am actually Lo Pan, though.
Ah.
Yeah. Oh, we forgot to introduce ourselves, didn't we? I'm David Lo Pan.
And I'm Lo Pan, Lo Pan.
I didn't expect you to say that. That's thrown me, actually. Should we bother telling them our real names?
No.
Nah, it doesn't matter. It doesn't affect them.
I'm Liam Martin.
I am John Richter.
And we are...
Together.
Natter.
This is Dark Natter.
We are Dark Natter.
We are Dark Natter.
Yeah.
I like that. Not this is Dark Natter.
We are
it.
Dark Natter.
Because without us, it wouldn't be a very good show, would it? Yeah, it was very good.
Wavelength. Good comedy timing.
That was a good comedy.
Good opening.
Well done.
Thank you.
Team. We should probably just cut it there then.
Yeah,
that's
a wrap.
Sadly, I'm afraid we can't. We are contractually obliged to talk for about 45 minutes, if not longer, about a piece of dark fiction.
Now, why don't you explain the concept?
Oh, yeah. I always forget to do this bit, don't I? Yeah. Concept is a very simple one. We are the custodians, the creepy custodians of a sinister, dark Hall of Fame, better known as the Hall of Pain. A lingering laugh. Haunting. You got a lot of emotion into that. Oh, moving. And every show, every fortnight, we alternate the duty of pitching to the other custodian.
To t'other.
Yaffot pitch to t'other.
Yeah.
Go on, say that.
What?
I have foot pitch to t'other.
I have foot pitch to t'other.
It's funny, yeah, Wigan. Yeah. No one can speak properly. A piece of dark fiction which one of us thinks is worthy of a place in those illustrious hallowed hallways and passages. And t'other has to decide whether they agree, whether they've been convinced by the pitch.
And obviously not a lot gets in.
Absolutely. No, in reality, everything we've ever picked. Because, peek behind the curtain here, folks, we actually agree beforehand what we're going to talk about. And we usually, therefore, agree on things
that we both quite like.
Yeah. Because it wouldn't be much fun if we just slagged it off, would it?
Well, you know, maybe one week we should do that, something.
I suppose there is the possibility we occasionally have a guest on, don't we?
That's true.
If they came on and pitched something really...
But then we'd probably be too polite.
I know. That's the problem.
Yeah.
There's no way in hell anything will ever fail to get in the way this show is currently structured.
But, hang on a minute, but today we are talking about, I'm pitching to you.
That's correct.
The Resident Evil series.
And now, there is some shit in there.
There is some absolute shit in there. I'm still pitching it. I'm still confident it'll get in. But there is some shit in there that may make you think twice.
Because the highs, the admittedly high highs,
well,
will need to be pretty damn high to offset some of those low lows.
Now, I think before we get started, it's important, first of all, spoilers, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
Not that the story makes much sense by this point anyway. It's a load of old bollocks. Convoluted.
Although I have a tendency to go into far too much detail recapping the stories of things. If I was to do that, we would literally be here for 10 hours.
Because there's been a lot of stuff. The other thing I was going to say is obviously spoilers, if you can spoil it. Probably not going to talk too much about the spin-offs and the films and whatnot. Obviously, we'll mention that, but this is really more about the mainline Resident Evil series.
Yeah, some of the broader generalities, some of the highs. In fact, let's try and focus in on those big, the best bits and the crappiest bits.
And for me, the best bit is the bit where it all began.
Oh, yeah.
The original Resident Evil.
What?
In my humble opinion, IMHO, as they say, you know, on their text messages
and pages,
Snapchits and
TikTok.
That's the one, yeah. The original is still the best, albeit the remake of the original.
Well, let's quickly cover off the sort of admin in the sense that when did the original first come out?
So the original first came out for the PlayStation 1 and, well, I played on the PlayStation
1. Me too.
1996.
Spot on. No, we're not, I won't, in the past, I think we've listed all of the entries in franchise. Yeah. There are so many that can't be asked. But this one, maybe to quickly skate over, you've got Resident Evil.
Yeah.
It's follow-up Resident Evil 2,
yeah.
3 and 4.
Resident Evil 3 Nemesis. Then that's I would class Code Veronica as being a kind of mainline entry.
Great point. You had Code Veronica, the first in effect spin-off, but I agree with you.
But it's still kind of mainline.
Then it was Resident Evil 4?
Resident Evil 0, which is a prequel, which is, again, I'd completely class that as a mainline entry. Then Resident Evil 4... Then 5.
And from
then
this 6, point, there's a
then
bit of...
7, yeah. Biohazard.
And without jumping around too much, I think the general consensus is good stuff all the way up to 4. 4 often hailed as a real massive return. Not so much a return to form, but a new type of game.
Yeah,
and we'll come back to 4.
We'll come back to
that
later,
definitely
but definitely,
mention.
Yeah.
You've then got 5... 6, and then 7, which came out, I think, last year.
No, it's a couple of years ago.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah.
And
it
that
flies by, doesn't it?
Again, very well received.
Yeah, it might even be 2017, you know.
And then sprinkled in there and culminated in last year's, again, slight spoiler, but what I thought was the best game to come out last year. A couple of remakes. So Resident Evil 2 got the remake treatment last year, and we'll come back to that because I thought it was fantastic. But you want to touch on not just the 1996 original, but the remake that came out.
Let first of all, before we talk about that, let me explain why I love the original.
Please do.
And because a lot of these things, especially with video games, you're dealing with nostalgia.
Yeah.
And I was always a Sega boy.
Me too.
Yeah, we've discussed this in the past, Streets of Rage.
Oh, it's Sonic.
Great stuff.
Another World. Sorry.
And so, you know, I had the Master System, I had the Mega Drive or the Genesis in the US. And then, I think maybe a year or so after it originally came out, got a PlayStation. Yeah. And the jump up from the Mega Drive to the PlayStation, the kind of things it was capable of, some of it hasn't aged well at all now because they went a bit too 3D polygon crazy. But the kind of stuff they could do, it was just so different to anything I'd sort of seen before. And Resident Evil was the first game I owned on the PlayStation.
It's a real funny coincidence because I had a very similar experience, which was our mutual friend Dave Roberts, who gets a mention on every single podcast we ever do. He acquired a PlayStation before me. So I'd had exactly the same as you, Sega Mega Drive, and maybe a few bits and pieces of PC games, like Doom and so on, which was, you know, amazing 3D graphics compared to what a Mega Drive could pull off, but was still pretty dated, you know, sprites and all that kind of stuff and sort of fake 3D background. And then I I went to his house and played a demo of Resident Evil 2.
Wow. And I couldn't believe
what I was seeing. I was like amazed that the graphics could be this good. And I went from, I'm kind of drifting away from video games. I'm a grown man now, you know, whatever, about, I don't know, 16 or something, 17, to, oh my God, I need to buy a PlayStation immediately. Yeah. And then I did. And I think Resi 2 was the first game I bought.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Funny.
Yeah. And it was just incredible. It was just so unlike anything I'd played before. It was so much more advanced in terms of the storytelling more than anything.
Yeah.
Was so much more advanced because traditionally, you know, a lot of like the 2D games or, you know, the isometric games, you would have the kind of little tiny cutscene, animated cutscene at the beginning to just tell you basically someone's been kidnapped or, you know.
Yeah.
Often it was, wasn't it? A lot of kidnapping in those games back in the day.
Like the Simpsons arcade game.
Yeah,
where Maggie got kidnapped at the beginning in a cutscene. Because the criminal is like a jewel thief.
That's right.
It looked a bit like Smithers, to be honest. It was weird.
It really did. Yeah.
And he comes out of the height, you know, the jewelers, crashes into the Simpsons, drops the diamond, and Maggie somehow gets it thinking it's a dummy.
Pacify, yeah.
Yeah. And then that's so. Yeah. So the jewel thief, instead of just taking it out of her mouth, he kidnaps the baby.
Yeah. But yeah, there was. So it was always very simplistic, and it was mainly just about the actual game, Streets of Rage. You know?
Set up with an opening little few, a bit of text, bit and a of few text pictures,
and a few pictures, and then a bit of text at the end.
Yeah.
But this one, it was like an interactive
film.
Yeah, it really was
cinematic.
Voice acting, incredibly bad voice acting, which is definitely in that category of so bad it's good.
In fact, am I right in saying that Resident Evil, the original, has full motion video in it?
Yes.
The others don't, but the first one did. It had like that the
cut scene at the beginning.
Actors. Yeah. Sort of, oh, that's hilarious, that cut scene, actually. I might try and cut a sample of that.
Yeah, definitely.
Because
yeah.
Just you might be able to hear even just audibly without the visuals how ropey the acting is.
No! Don't go!
Chris Redfield, Jill Valentine, Barry Burton, Rebecca Chambers, Albert Wesker. Resident Evil.
And it took place in this sort of creepy mansion, which again, I think is still the best setting.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
You can't go wrong with a creepy mansion. It just the little sound effects of the footsteps and the groans of the zombies and...
Ticking of the clock in the dining room.
Spot on, yeah.
And that was probably a nod, not a nod to, a strong inspiration by Alone in the Dark.
Yeah, oh, totally.
It was probably a predecessor.
Yeah, it really was, but I think I can't think of the example, but we kind of spoke about this before, about it wasn't necessarily the first survival horror game, but it was, I think you can safely say it was the one that popularised the genre.
And arguably helped to repopularise just zombies in general in the 90s, because that was when they had their big resurgence.
That's right,
This is probably part of that.
Yeah.
One other thing, sorry, I was just going to mention about the mansion is that why it's... So in Japan, it's called Biohazard, which makes a lot more sense given the story.
Yeah.
Sinister Corporation creates bioweapons. For some reason, that turns into zombies. Resident Evil. Is that just a crap pun on residents of a house?
Residential Evil.
Residential Evil. I think that is why it's called that. I can't think of any other reason for it.
Which is remarkable that it's
sort of
the test of time, yeah.
Resident Evil.
Oh, yeah, the voice
on the menu screen.
When you press to actually play the game.
And then on the second one, he had like a button. He was like, Resident Evil.
But yeah, it was just so unlike anything I'd seen before. And it was creepy. Even with the sort of really shit voice acting. Even I play it today and I still find it creepy. It's quite intense because it had a kind of fixed camera with what they call tank controls, which a lot of people now, if you've never played a Resident Evil game before, they just can't get their head around it, but I still find it quite straightforward.
And I know maybe this is just a generational thing, isn't it? But I still like the tank controls.
I don't mind at all. I was speaking to someone the other day, and they said, they never played the sort of old Resi games or even the remake of the old Resi games because of the tank controls.
I always manage to cram one of these in. I find it annoying when people will... They'll talk about let's stick to video games. This could apply to other media, but video games perhaps very commonly. And they'll say, wouldn't it be great if this was remade for a modern audience and brought up to what we expect from a modern game?
Yeah.
And I'm like, if you can justify why it's this new thing is better,
yeah,
that's fine. But don't just dismiss things because they are old.
Yeah.
Like if you can articulate why tank controls are crap in your opinion, that's fine.
Yeah.
But don't just say, oh, everyone knows tank controls are crap.
Because well, I find them actually quite...
Agreed. Yeah. I think they arguably make more sense.
Quite well.
Well, yeah, they definitely work better in a game with fixed camera angles.
Yes.
Because you want up to mean forward rather, yes, than up could mean at 1 minute it means left and the next minute it means,
yeah,
right.
Yeah, you'd end up just...
all over the place.
All over the place, yeah.
And then people say, well, we don't want fixed camera angles. That was a limitation of the technology. We want a roving camera. But I'd argue that the fixed camera angles heightened the drama and the tension.
And while, you know, the Resident Evil 2 remake, which came out last year, you know, obviously that is a modernised,
yeah,
version of it. And it's brilliant.
It's
works really
good.
Well.
Yeah.
But the fixed camera angles for the time, yeah, they did create tension because you couldn't... You could hear things,
yeah,
but you couldn't always see them, and that made it more... It just ramped up the tension. It made,
yeah,
it sort of scarier.
And you could pull off things like... I seem to remember there was a shot... Oh, maybe this was in the second one again, because I have played that more than the first, admittedly, where you'd seen something crawl across a window, and you were, what the fuck was that?
Yeah.
You go around the corner, and then the camera angle is through the window from outside.
Yes.
So
yeah,
it's almost implying that whatever you just saw is now watching you.
Yeah.
And clever stuff like that you can't really do with a camera,
yes,
over the shoulder,
yeah,
following you anymore. But
that's true. Yeah, very true. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like you said earlier about it being an interactive movie. In a movie, the director, you know, picks every shot because they want you to see things a certain,
yeah,
way. And that's kind of, again, it probably was just a technical, you know,
yeah,
limitation, but it kind of works in the same way.
Yeah, totally.
In that instance, the director is kind of wants you to see it from that viewpoint to make you think that this thing that's out there is watching you.
Obscure your view of,
yeah,
something else.
Exactly. So I think it works, and it does arguably, you know, make the game
scary. It'd
be
interesting if, I wonder if there are any, a modern game with fixed camera positions and tank controls. I wonder if someone would be brave enough to do
that.
Well,
they did do like, I cannot for the life of me remember what it was called, but they did some indie developer made,
oh,
some,
yeah,
sort of like survival horror style game, but I don't think it was
any good.
Yeah, I think it was supposed to be
because of those shit tank controls.
Yeah, probably. I could be wrong on that, but my recollection is that it didn't go down that well.
Oh, okay.
But it had that sort of whole Resident Evil style. Visual style.
Old school.
Yeah.
And they kind of, I don't mean to keep jumping ahead to the remake, we'll get to that, but that when they remade the first Resident Evil, they did use the fixed camera angle still,
yeah,
to good effect, even though it was about 10 years later. But,
and yeah, so Resident Evil, yeah, so basically, yeah, that was why I loved it, because it was just such a huge jump up from anything I'd seen. And I always liked,
yeah,
horror. I mean, that's why we do, you know, dark fiction,
yeah,
that's why we do this podcast. And to actually be able to experience
3D
that, but in a video game, because,
yeah,
I'd never played a scary video,
yeah,
game before. I'd only ever read horror novels and watched horror TV shows and movies. I've never actually played
been scared
now,
properly,
you know, that,
scared
that's
by
something
a game
we take for granted now, but
yeah,
yeah, that was the first time I played a video game that actually made me, like, when the spiders dropped down and made,
yeah,
me jump, when the dogs jumped through,
yeah,
the window.
Yeah, that iconic
made me
dog
jump.
Smashed through the window, jump scares.
So it
scene.
Had jump scares. It also just had that sort of sense of dread. You know, there's a great bit, actually. It's kind of the second half of the game after you come back from the outhouse.
Oh, yeah.
And that this is when the hunters get introduced.
Whoa,
and you see that first-person cutscene of them coming through that corridor.
Through their perspective.
Through their perspective.
Yeah.
And you see their arm opening the door. And it was just, yeah, it was so,
yeah,
nice. So it terrifying as well.
I remember being, so by this point, you'd kind of got used to the zombies,
exactly,
that are,
yeah,
slow and,
yeah,
useless and relatively easy to dodge.
And you had a couple of other things that you had to deal with. But generally speaking, yeah, you knew.
You've got over your initial,
yeah,
fear of that. Because that first zombie encounter is brilliantly,
oh, great,
done.
Yeah.
That it sort of turns around slowly.
And you don't know, like, how can I get past, like, how much room do I need to get,
yeah,
past the zombie, or do I have to kill it? And there's that bit, you know, when are they dead? It was always that sort of brown.
Yeah, you're not quite sure because you haven't yet realised that, oh, if there's a red blood pool, it means they're dead.
They're properly dead.
But then after a couple of hours, maybe you've got used to all those things. You're like, oh, I've got the measure of this. And then suddenly, bang, new enemy is introduced. Yeah. You don't know what it's going to look like, but you know it's in the house.
Yeah.
And they were fucking scary.
Oh, God, yeah. And they were bloody hard.
And they could chop your head off in one hit, couldn't they? They could do like an instant kill. Yeah. So you were afraid. I always like that when a game manages to make you afraid of an enemy in a gameplay sense, because the enemy is really dangerous to your survival.
Bloodborne did that loads, didn't it?
Brilliant. Yeah. Made you afraid. You're afraid of them because they look scary.
Yes.
And then you're also afraid of them because they're dangerous.
Yeah.
Brilliant. And it's one other thing probably worth mentioning about, well, all the Resident Evil games, or certainly in the first one, was this sort of... So survival horror, which again was popularised by Resident Evil, was all about limited resources.
That's right, yeah.
Which means...
Which is a very important part of the sort of fear factor, isn't it?
Totally.
Which I'm sure that's what you're about to say.
But you're right to underline this because it's crucial. And I think there were different difficulty settings.
First of all, there were two characters. You could play as Jill
Valentine
and Chris
Redfield.
And it was actually a little bit harder as Chris
because he had fewer items.
That's right.
So this was where I was going to get to. There's almost two components to the resource management bit. One of them is there aren't many bullets and for your guns.
So you've got to decide, right, what do I need to kill?
Yeah, what can I just avoid?
And then sometimes you'll panic fire. Yeah. And, you know, there's all this kind of
stuff.
You've
wasted your ammo. Do I resort to my
knife?
Horrible
feeling, isn't it? Wasting that ammo. Yeah.
So you, and then obviously, and this is something you learn as you get older, I guess. When you're younger, your tendency, or maybe this was just me, tendency was to, I'll go on an easier difficulty setting then so I don't have to face this feeling of impotence and powerlessness.
Yeah.
Whereas as you get older, you love it. You cherish that.
You're just so used to it.
you can relate to it more. So yeah, you put it on the maximum difficulty setting so you get as few bullets as possible so you feel more pathetic and terrified.
Powerless.
But the other thing, as you rightly say, was you then had a limited number of item carrying slots.
Yes.
Which meant that at any one time, you might be kind of, oh, shit, if I take this gun and this ammo, that's six more shots that I could get off to protect myself. But that'll be two item slots.
Yeah.
And what if I find an item I need to collect? Yeah. I might end up having to abandon the ammo. But then if I don't take it, then I'm going to be defenseless for this particular run across the mansion. And this was just a constant dilemma that you had all the time.
So managing your inventory is, a huge part of the game.
Yeah.
And different Resident Evils have tackled it in different ways, but you know, the classic way was simply, you had a set number of slots and you unlock more slots as you
could get
along,
like extra pouches and stuff. But that was really just to enable you to have a few more weapons.
Because the weapon, you obviously unlock more weapons as you go along, more powerful weapons to deal with more powerful enemies.
Yes.
So they kind of had to give you some more. But totally, you had to. A lot of it was, it sort of made you come up with little strategies. Like you would go on, what I would always do anyway is, right, for the next half an hour, I'm scavenging for items.
Yeah.
So I'm going to ditch all my stuff. I'm just going to take the bare essentials.
Brilliant.
I know I left something there. I know I left a herb there and I left this there. So you'd go get it, bring it back to your storage
deposit box kind of thing. Yeah.
And then rinse and repeat, because again, there was always that risk of not having enough space and not having enough ammo, and
there's nothing worse than you find a room with a new item in a key card, something absolutely crucial,
and you
didn't have enough slots to pick it up,
so
you've got to come all the way back. Bollocks. And there's old zombies outside banging on the door, or even a new enemy that wasn't there before, because sometimes they mix it up and put things would appear that weren't there.
But then becomes the choice of I do this route quite a lot, so maybe I should clear out this corridor, but this particular corridor, or actually,
I can
there's
run
plenty
past
of
them.
Room in this place, so I can just run past them. And there's all these kind of things to think about.
We should perhaps touch on just one other gameplay element. So as well as the combat, resource management, legging it away from / shooting at some increasingly more horrific monsters, there was also an element of puzzling, wasn't there?
Yeah,
basically kind of rudimentary,
very rudimentary
shit puzzles.
Yeah.
But
you get the odd one that's a bit of a head scratcher. But for the most part, they weren't the best, were they, the puzzles?
Quite
a welcome addition, but they weren't particularly challenging. It wasn't the main component of the game, and it showed
And there was always that kind of complete illogicality of why would these scientists who were using the mansion to cover up an underground facility, why would they want to have to collect four different keys that had different suits of playing cards and unlock four different doors?
I mean, that
just to get into work on a Monday morning.
That side of it is complete bollocks. when you think about that, like having to get a jewel to, you know, put in a scepter to get the arm off, shove it in another hole somewhere else. To get a medallion to put in it. It's just, absolutely ridiculous.
It's like the idea of them all being like at work. Oh, so you've done the medallion. Oh, you've got the medallion. Oh, bollocks. Hey, ringing the boss up. We're going to be 10 minutes late because Numpty forgot the medallion.
I think the first Resident Evil as well is another reason I like it is because I think it has, and this is always going to be the case generally with the first of anything, it's the most kind of purest and simplest form of the story.
Yeah, and that's one, I think, you know, this idea that with a handful of exceptions, sequels are always a bit crapper.
Yeah.
It's for that reason, isn't it? It's the first time you've consumed the story purest form.
This is a sort of sidebar, really. Games, I always think, have the ability to be better. Game sequels have the ability to be better than their predecessors from a gameplay, because they can refine things. But in a game where you're dealing with sort of characters and story like this, I think the first one is generally going to be better. It's like Bloodborne. We both love it. But if they did release a Bloodborne 2, and I'd love them to, but at the same time,
it wouldn't be
as good.
And I think what we must remember is, although it seems so well known that, Resident Evil, that's about that corporation that makes zombies, the Umbrella Corporation. Yeah. The first time you played the first game, you didn't know that.
No idea.
So you actually didn't know who was a villain, who was not a villain. You didn't know there was going to be a science lab underneath the mansion. You even might have thought there was a paranormal element to the story the first time you played it. So you're never going to get that experience again of complete unknown revelations.
Certainly, because I didn't know much about the game. You know, we didn't have the internet back then.
No, exactly.
So I read about it in gaming magazines, but they don't give away spoilers.
No.
You just know, it's a zombie game. And
something's afoot in the mansion. That's it. That's
we should probably explain the plot then, the original one.
I'll have a go at this, right?
Go on then.
So the stars team, we'll come back to that. The stars team, fuck knows what that stood for. There were special tossers specialists. There was some sort of elite crack team that was an offshoot of the police. Sorry, I've already messed it up. Raccoon City is a city.
Yeah.
With maybe, I don't know whether it had more raccoons than normal.
Maybe.
But it was mainly populated by people. It wasn't a city of raccoon human hybrids.
Do you want to get on with it?
Do you want to go? Yeah. And in this city, there was a mansion.
Yeah.
And
on the outskirts of the city.
The police department had a special, like a SWAT team, like its own special SWAT team called Stars.
Yeah.
I don't know why this city required its own special SWAT team.
Well, clearly there was something afoot. So.
It was a good job they had one.
Yeah, exactly.
And they were deployed to investigate a disturbance at the mansion.
Yeah.
Is it a helicopter?
So yeah,
did they crash their helicopter on the way there or something?
Crash. There was two teams. So the team we play as
is
was
like
sent
Bravo
to investigate the disappearance of the other team.
Got it. Yeah, that's it.
But then they get attacked by these like mutant dogs. So they
driven into the mansion,
driven into
slam
this
the door,
mansion.
Keep the dogs out. And there was a little Easter egg, but if you actually try to open the door of the mansion, the dogs appear and attack you, which is quite.
That
I
is
like
good,
it when
actually,
game instead of just giving you some text saying, "Oh, I don't want to go outside," they actually bothered to show you a scary bit. So the team is Chris Redfield, as a sort of generic action man, hunk,
top lad.
Jill Valentine, a sort of generic, capable female operative. Good looking, but not too good looking.
Yeah.
You know, like she was kind of, she meant business.
Yeah.
Don't mess with
her. Yeah, weirdly, considering the era, they didn't like over sexualize her
would
expect.
96,
to.
You'd have thought it would have been like
she
Lara
been
Croft
like,
proportions.
Yeah, like everybody else would have been in, you know,
skimpy
SWAT
shorts.
Gear, but she would have been in like a busty.
Yeah.
They actually didn't do that, which is, you know.
Quite commendable for the time.
Fair play.
Then there was Barry Burton.
Oh, yeah.
Who was
he was the best.
Grizzled, bearded.
Ever,
and this was before, like, that character had become maybe quite so archetypal as it is now, like the kind of dad, dad, fatherly kind of character, lumberjack kind of character.
Yeah.
So he was like just a lovely fella.
Yeah.
And he was more prominent in Jill's story.
Yeah.
Whereas in Chris's story, more prominence was given to the leader of the Stars Bravo team, which was a sunglasses-wearing, cool, sort of slick, cool dude called Albert Wesker.
Yeah.
Who was immediately my favourite character.
Definitely.
At first sight.
Yeah.
And he occasionally would show up and he'd be like, you know, God damn it, Chris, you piece of shit. Why can't you be more like me? And he'd just knock off the zombie really easily.
He would actually, wouldn't he?
Yeah, very capable.
So they're driven into this mansion. So they, right, what's going on? You know, mutant dogs, missing team. So they investigate the mansion separately.
Don't they find one of the...
Depending on who you play as, different characters disappear.
Yeah.
So that kind of becomes the point of your story. So, well, what happened to them?
I think you find one of the first team.
You do,
having their face eaten off by a zombie.
That's
early
kind
doors.
Of the earliest part, really. You walk through the dining room and out into another corridor, and then you see your first zombie in an iconic cutscene.
Yeah, it's brilliant. Still brilliant.
Zombie
still
turns around and, you know, starts coming at you. So then you realise, shit, something really strange is going on. So you investigate the mansion. Then you find, you know, as we pointed out, all these ridiculous
shitloads of keys.
Keys and medallions and
gemstones.
Yeah, leather books.
God.
Eventually, we could go into more detail, but I don't think it's necessary. Eventually, you realise that this mansion actually is basically the base for an underground lab.
Yeah, it's like a front. I don't really know why. If the lab is hidden underground, why didn't they just leave it at that?
Yeah, exactly.
To then stick a mansion on top. But anyway, Umbrella decided that would be for the best.
So then, obviously, you realise, this Umbrella Corporation is responsible for creating this T-virus.
The T-virus. What does T stand for?
I don't
Terrifying
know.
Terrifying virus.
And you learn, which is what's kind of been turning these people into zombies.
Yeah, and I guess at that point, it's funny, I remember when I was that age, I was really pleased that there was a proper, credible, very realistic explanation for it. Oh, there's a scientific explanation for all this. It's a viral outbreak.
Yeah.
Because I didn't want there to be like a paranormal, unexplained reason. And then over the years since, I've completely shifted.
Yeah.
Hence my love of Silent Hill, which I'm sure I'll inevitably come back to draw a few comparisons. But yeah, Resident Evil is... it's completely grounded in a, albeit far-fetched, bollocks, but real-world setting.
Yes.
And
then you realise that... so you find this underground lab, you realise that Umbrella have developed this to be some sort of biological weapon. It turns out Wesker is working for Umbrella, and he actually kind of led you there. And the reason you've been led there is because they wanted to sort of test this virus in a real-world setting to see if they're... creations
did the job, which basically they don't, because one woman or one bloke can basically fend off hundreds of them with
and you've actually got the main kind of boss is this thing called the Tyrant, who is kind of like, that's the sort of what they're aiming
the pinnacle
for.
It's basically just a really big muscly
sort of
bald bloke with one weird arm.
Yeah.
Like a big, what was it, like an anime arm. You know what I mean? No, one normal arm, one with claws on it and an eyeball or something.
So they're basically kind of testing, working out the kinks by putting you through the paces. Can you survive? Are these things any good? Is the Tyrant ready to become some sort of biological weapon?
Weapon of mass destruction. Doesn't it burst out and kill Wesker? And is he giving it all the, like, but at least the Tyrant has finally reached his true potential?
That's right,
some shit like that.
There are a couple of more, like Barry is kind of working for Wesker because he's been blackmailed, but he sort of comes good in the end.
Does Ada Wong appear in the first game?
I think it's the second one.
Oh, okay. Leon's kind of like guardian angel.
Yeah,
she comes in the second one. Sorry, okay.
That's just... kind of the condensed version of the plot of the first game.
You manage to defeat the Tyrant creature.
Yeah.
Wesker's dead.
Yeah.
The lab's off.
The lab's
self-destructed. T-virus outbreak's been contained within the mansion. Jobs are good and well done, Stars.
Well done.
Chris and Jill can go and get out on the lash in Raccoon City. And that's it. That was the end of the franchise. They never made another game.
Well, of course they did. And sort of it becomes increasingly more bollocks as we go along in terms of justifying
anything
what's
going on
in the plot. Yeah, so you got Resident Evil 2, which is a really fantastic game. Yeah, I think it's set like a couple of months after.
The outbreak has spilled over into the city.
Raccoon City itself. Yeah. And Chris's sister,
Claire,
has come to try and find her brother.
He's gone missing.
He's gone missing. And she meets a rookie cop called Leon.
Who is Ace?
Oh, I love Leon, yeah. We won't go into the whole...
The only thing I want to say about the plot of Resident Evil 2... There's two things. Two things I want to say about the plot of Resident Evil 2. There's two characters that you meet who have varying degrees of comeuppance during it. One of them is this fella called William Birkin.
Oh, yeah.
Who is one of the scientists who worked on the original T-virus, or did he work on the follow-up?
The better version,
yeah. Which seems to be exactly the same, by the way. But and he ends up injecting himself with his own
virus,
which gives him a big anime arm with an eyeball on it.
Yeah.
And then by the end, he's turned into this
huge,
glutinous mass of like teeth and tentacles that fills an entire train carriage.
Right,
and
you
know, and you're like, oh, that didn't go very well, did it? But he was great.
He was great.
I liked the chief Brian Irons.
I knew you were going to say that.
What an absolute piece of shit he was. That, like a fat, mustachioed, stereotypical, kind of bad, corrupt police chief.
And yeah, that's the key thing. He was corrupt. He was kind of covering up the
in
umbrellas.
He was on the umbrella's payroll.
Basically, yeah.
So that would have been enough, right? It would have been enough that he's a corrupt cop.
Yeah.
But they gave him like a sinister taxidermy gimmick.
That's right, yeah.
But then that had spilled over into he was just...
To a person.
He's got like a dead woman on his desk when you first meet him.
Yeah,
there was no need for that bit to exist.
Because there's a file you read where it sort of hints that he wants to start hunting
people. And it's like, he's a bad enough guy already. We didn't need that.
That reminds me of... Did you see the Rambo film from like 2008,
No.
So that is brilliant action, like pure action movie. And the baddie in that, it's like, I'm not sure where, but some sort of South American country. Southeast Asian country where there's like a military coup and they're real bastards. The sort of head honcho, real piece of shit, making people run through these like minefields, like just for sport. Real piece of shit, right?
Yeah, so we've established he's a villain.
No question about that. He needs to go. About three quarters of the way through the film, you then find out he's also a paedophile.
Yeah,
as though you needed another reason to hate him.
There's no need to, we get it.
Yeah.
We're not supposed to sympathize
with him. And that is exactly like, Chief Irons, isn't it?
Although they, just as a, I guess, an interesting link, one of the other characters who appears in Resident Evil 2 is the little girl.
Sherry Birkin.
Oh, she's Sherry Birkin.
She's Birkin's
daughter.
Yeah, she's the daughter.
And in the remake with the scene with Irons, they sort of gave him a bit of a creepy pedo vibe, although it wasn't explicitly said. It was horrible, that bit.
Well, he was. I didn't get the pedo vibe, to be honest with you.
Maybe it was just a sweaty, unpleasant middle-aged man chasing a little girl around in a creepy orphanage. But you're right.
When you put it like that.
But it wasn't explicit. You're right.
That was one, actually, the remake, like where, you know, sometimes you watch films or play video games, especially video games, actually, where they use bad language where they probably didn't need to.
It was
Resident 2 is so, bad for that, because he's like,
come here, you little bitch.
And it was maybe meant to make him
seem horrible, but as you've already said, like, we already knew.
Yeah.
We read the memo that said he was corrupt. Like, we didn't need...
He's like, I'll get you, little bitch. And
it's just
a bit unnecessary.
Although it did make me really want him to get... So when he did... Get his just desserts. I was very pleased.
Yeah, she throws like acid in his face.
Yeah, and he's got stumbling around. It was pretty good.
It was
stuff.
Good stuff. Yeah, and actually, you get to play as Sherry Birkin. Yeah,
which makes you feel really disempowered
because you've got no weapons.
And then, so again, I promise we won't cover all the plot of every game. just to illustrate how silly it gets, by the third game, you've got a specially bred next generation tyrant creature.
Well, you kind of had that in two, though, because you had Mr. X.
And yeah. But we'll definitely come. I'll explain the nemesis creature first.
Yes.
And then we'll pick up Mr. X when we come to the remake of Resi 2, yep. if that's okay. Because
yep, yep.
he's based that, I think, is basically the pinnacle of the entire series, for me anyway.
Okay.
Was him, his incarnation in the Resi 2 remake. I just thought it was brilliant.
Oh.
Yeah, the nemesis creature was just like this hideous...
Yeah.
It was a big lumbering tyrant creature, but it was specially programmed to seek out the STARS
because team. Didn't want any witnesses. And that is set... When is Resident Evil 3 set? It's set...
I think it's concurrently with Resident Evil 2 in the city.
And he's basically the nemesis is... Getting rid of any, stars, but getting rid of any witnesses.
Yeah, it's like it was silly, just a silly story.
Albeit, I think Nemesis was, that for me at the time felt almost a little bit rushed. It felt like by that point you'd kind of seen it all before.
Yeah, it felt like a little bit of a rehash. There weren't many new ideas in that game.
So but again, it still, I think, falls into that original trilogy where it's like still somewhat pure, you can still quite justify.
It was PS1.
It was still PS1.
I think I'm right in saying it was originally intended to be a spin-off game, and then they changed their minds.
Doesn't surprise me.
And made it into a full-blown sequel, but it does have that. Oh, that was a bit short. Oh, that was a bit similar to the last one.
Definitely
kind of problem.
Albeit, like I said, it's still sort of simple and pure enough that it kind of
felt like a nice trilogy.
The bollocks hasn't gone too far yet. It's not too up its own arse and convoluted.
And then Resident Evil 4. You want to cover some of the...
Well, you've got... This is the only reason I want to cover this is because I love this game. You've got Resident Evil Code Veronica, which I had on the Dreamcast.
Wow.
And it was, I think it was a Dreamcast exclusive for a while, but it ended up coming out on other consoles. And it looked... graphically, it was like real massive step up.
Yeah.
And it was set in like this completely different location. And it's got this, it's just a really silly, over the top, but kind of in a good way plot.
Was this the one that had a little, no, it wasn't the dwarf, that was Resi 4. One of them has an evil dwarf in it, and one of them has a, what would you call it, like a cackling villain. Who also has a sister, and the big reveal is that it's just him.
That is Code
he's like
Veronica.
So he's like a schizophrenic Norman Bates character who thinks he's his own sister.
Which I think it's really entertaining. Yeah. Weirdly,
I remember I get it mixed up. Know I have played Veronica and I loved it
weirdly,
for that reason as well.
I've played Resident Evil the original in all of its forms. I've played and completed probably the same with you in Silent Hill. I've played them so many times. And Resident Evil Code Veronica is another one I've played like through to completion, maybe like 5 or 6 times.
Oh my gosh, I think I only did
it
once.
Not for a long time now, but all the others were kind of like one and done, maybe two.
Yeah.
Like Resi 2 I've played a few times because you kind of have to play it twice to get the good ending. But yeah, Code Veronica, so it's one of those weird ones where I know it's not as good as the others,
but
in a way. But
you're fond of it.
But I'm fond of it.
And I love that villain.
And it's such a good villain.
And it felt like this is where they nailed. So I'm not sure if the original Resident Evil was going for so bad it's good B movie. I think we give it the benefit of the doubt.
Yes.
Because it has since embraced the B movie thing, and it's a complete schlocky nonsense. Doesn't matter if the acting's crap. It's actually better if the acting's crap and silly plot twists and this stuff with the kind of daft, comic book pantomime villain. Brilliant.
Yeah.
And that's when I think the series is at its best, when it knows it's meant to be kind of funny.
Yeah.
You still want it to be scary.
Definitely.
So the monsters have to be scary and the tension has to be real. But the storyline, don't kid yourselves, Capcom, you haven't written some great piece of fiction. And then I think certainly in the much maligned 5th and definitely 6th installments, they got completely wrapped up in like
massive
their own. What I don't know. Wesker was trying to build a super, and he turned out to be superhuman. But it was actually his son. No one gives a shit. No one gives a shit about Wesker, and it's the same thing as the Silent Hill games when they got obsessed with all the cult and all of its goings on. It's like no one No one cares about that. We just want the little human stories. Yeah, exactly.
After that, they actually, I think they after that, it was when they released the Resident Evil remake on the GameCube. It's since been re-released on the PS4.
You can get it, which is when I first played it. And it's absolutely ace.
We may disagree on this, but for me, it's the best Resident Evil game.
It's brilliant.
It takes everything, like I said, because the original one was so pure, had the best setting. It takes that. And it just expands on it, and there's some extra kind of side stories, and yeah, it's so good.
What's the name of that sad, scary woman that they've added? That little subplot.
That is great.
Hang on, let's have a look.
Yeah, have a look.
Lisa Trevor. That's it. That's the one. What was her deal? She was just very sad. she'd been turned into an horrible monster and was shuffling through the game in very slow, creepy pursuit. Did she have like chains? I seem to remember there was like a clanking chains sound effect.
It was great.
Whenever you heard that, there was a few of them in these games, like that Pavlovian. Oh fuck shit! Yes. It's the sound of the run.
Again, we talked Bloodborne had a few things like that, didn't it? The horrible. What are they called? The ones that give you frenzy.
Oh, those flipping eyeball winter lanterns.
Winter lanterns, yeah, but they've got that sort of
song.
Yeah.
Oh, and as soon as you hear it, you just completely panic. Yeah. Brilliant. And actually, that thing of being pursued, let's try and weave this in there. So Resident Evil 2, the original, was the first time they introduced a creature that was pursuing you throughout the game.
Yes.
Now, although you bumped into the William Birkin character, occasionally, that was more.
That was like a
random encounters. He felt like he had his own business that he was getting on with. Whereas Resident Evil 2 had you could pick one of two characters, but this time it had. Whereas the first one, you either played as someone or someone else, and they were meant to be concurrently experiencing the game. I'm not sure if some of the stuff that happened was a bit mutually exclusive and a bit confusing, but just about fitted together, Claire and Jill. Chris and Jill.
Yeah.
In the second one, you could play as either character, but then their A or B scenario.
Yeah.
What that meant was, the idea was supposed to be, if you played as Leon, A, you would then play as Claire, B, and you would actually see what she was doing at the same time as Leon.
Yeah.
And indeed, the two stories kind of intersected at certain points, where if you were playing Leon, you'd meet Claire in a room.
Yeah.
And if you played as Claire B scenario, you'd meet Leon in the same room at the same point. So it was quite clever. It did piss me off that they didn't quite get that right.
No.
Because there were certain things that, you know, Leon would find an item and put it somewhere, and then in the Claire B scenario, she'd find the same item and put it somewhere else.
Yeah, she'd still have to find still have to find the same keys. Yeah, and
maybe that was a limitation at the time. They didn't have enough bandwidth to make two truly separate adventures.
Yeah.
But it gave you the essence of this idea that you were playing as both halves of a story.
If you played both halves, as you said, you get that extra bit at the end where you fight the real boss and you get the real ending.
So you were rewarded for getting through the whole story, which was brilliant. But in the B scenarios, whoever you played as, Leon or Claire, you were introduced to this Mr. X creature. He's never actually called Mr. X in the game.
No.
That's like a fan name that's been bestowed on him. And it was, again, it was basically just the Tyrant again from the first game. But instead of it being this naked, muscle-bound, lumbering monster with a big arm, he was kind of fully clothed with like a trench coat on and looked really cool, really menacing. Like, you could almost believe he was just some big, burly security guard.
Yeah.
And his little scripted bits where he would show up, there was the one where he popped up on like a video camera.
Yeah.
And you, oh shit, where is he? Oh, he's on the security camera. And then you went around the corner and there he was.
Wasn't that in Nemesis though? Well, they probably just did the exact same
bit
in Nemesis.
It's definitely in Resi 2.
Yeah.
But wouldn't surprise me if they then lifted it and reused it.
Because I remember, really being impressed by that bit.
Oh, so good. So I ended up preferring the kind of B playthrough to the first one because it felt like a genuine enhancement of the first playthrough, because it was the same game again, but with this presence that was, although all the encounters were scripted, it felt like he was genuinely, he could pop out at any moment. You were scared of him. The Nemesis creature in the third one, same idea again. The one thing they did do that was sounds ridiculous, but was massive, he could go through doors.
Yes, yeah.
So the one way to defeat the tyrant, Mr. X, was just go through a door. He couldn't, you know, the music would fade, you were safe again. But in the third game, the very first time, I'll just go through this door.
Yeah.
And then you'd walk into the script, and then suddenly you'd hear the... What?
Yeah.
And then he popped up again. I was like, my mind was blown by that. Because
it was always... Apparently, in the remake of Resident Evil 3 Nemesis, which will probably be out about the same time as this podcast drops, that's why we did it, the nemesis will be able to even come into the safe rooms.
Well, so it's interesting you say that, because that was one of the problems with... The only few problems I had with the Resi 2 remake. So and I know
so the Resident Evil 2 remake takes the idea of Mr. X... But he's in both.
Yeah, he's given much more centre stage. I think the design of him, they've kept pretty true to the original with the big trench coat, but they've given him this really horrible-looking face. But it's not so much that his face is kind of sort of craggy and pale. It's that he doesn't ever display any emotion. Mm. So he just looks a little bit mildly grumpy all the time, even if you're shooting him in the head and the face, and he just looks... He's not... You know, it's just very, he's fixated. He's got this cold, dead stare. Mm. And they've given him a little fedora hat, which I love. Like, why would he have that? And you get, like, this little unlockable reward if you shoot it on his edge. And the AI that they've deployed to make, so instead of Mr. X appear limited, instead of the technical limitations that used to mean that Mr. X could only appear occasionally at scripted moments, now he's a constant presence throughout the game in the police station, pursuing you, searching for you. And often when you're in a room, you can hear
him knocking
about upstairs or outside.
You can even see him through some doors.
Brilliant.
Because some of the doors have got that sort of like misty sort of glass.
Oh, it's so good.
And you can see him walk by. However, that's your favourite part about the remake, isn't it?
I loved the first time I realised, oh my God, he can actually follow me from room to room. He ducks under the door frame. He pushes zombies out the way to get to you. I especially love the bit where there's a kind of central foyer, lobby, whatever you call it, of the daft police. The centrepiece of Resident Evil 2 is the police station rather than a mansion. Same difference. And actually, it's fuck all like a police station. No. It's more like a mansion.
But it used to be...
It's a converted art museum.
That's right, yeah.
Which is, you know, the justification for making a very mansion-like police station. And let's say you've emerged onto the third floor and you peer down over the edge. Sometimes you can see him knocking about on the ground floor in his search for you, and he sort of stops and looks up as if he's like, "I'm gonna get you." I love it. It's brilliant.
I must admit, though, I did like it. I thought it was very good, and I did find it a little bit irritating at times because the sound effects didn't make any sense.
You couldn't derive any benefit from hearing them?
Yeah.
You couldn't place where he was?
Certainly when he's like really close by, you know he's really close by because there's a bigger sort of clanking. But you couldn't really at some points tell where he was. So you'd run into a safe room and he would automatically weirdly just stop following you.
Because he's like, safe room, I better knock off, and that's nice to have a safe haven. Yeah.
But then you'd wait for him to sort of go. And then he would just randomly, oh, he's upstairs now, is it? It just sometimes it didn't really make sense where he was.
I watched a video of how he worked, and he didn't teleport ever.
No.
He was always moving, but they sped him up. So when he was somewhere that you weren't, he was moving at something like 4 or 8 times faster.
That makes sense, yeah.
And so he would appear to be able to get around more quickly than he might reasonably be expected to. But
so there were just some times where it just felt like, look, I can easily avoid you and just go in this safe room. I've just got to do this thing, but you're just going to randomly be there because obviously you've been sped up. I don't know. I find it sometimes a little bit... I just wish there was a way that you could maybe like fire a tracker on him or something and then plan your playthrough.
You felt a bit... It was a bit random whether he was just there or not.
Well, obviously, like you said, because they've...
In effect, it was random.
They've basically made it so he's always going to be kind of close by.
Yeah.
Which is fine, but I just kind of wish you could strategize a bit more.
No, I know what you mean.
Yeah, you know.
And certainly...
Because that would still be scary. Even if he's on the other side, if you open up the map and he's on the other side because you've fired some sort of tracking dart into him or something, and you see him moving around the map, like, it's still frightening because, oh, I kind of needed to go there, but I'm going to have to take the long way around. And then you open the map again, you're like, shit, he's there. It would still be frightening, and you could hear him, good. But it would just make it a bit more logical and, you know, you could plan for it a bit more, which
it would have been,
I don't know. Maybe I'm probably just being hypercritical, but...
No, it would be interesting. And certainly, I think we definitely agree that his inability to access the save rooms, although well-intentioned, because the game wanted to give you some brief respite from the absolutely horrific onslaught of modern-day super graphics, terrifying zombies and monsters.
And the sound effects. And
really scary shit. It, you know,
I'd agree that actually probably Resident Evil 2 Remake is the scariest one.
Yeah, at some points I was like, oh, I've not got this in me, I'm going to have to turn it off for a bit. It was the torchlight and the darkness. Yeah. But then when Mr. X had, you know, tracked you or followed you mercilessly all the way to this room under the stairs, and then he just ran, can't go in that one, and just naffed off. That did spoil it a little bit, undermine the threat a little bit. So it's great news if they're going to bin that off in the third one and nowhere is safe. That'll be really, really good, I think.
But, again, could it be annoying. Frustrating and annoying? Yeah, because you can't... It depends how big of a threat he is throughout the game.
Yeah.
Is he always going to be there on your ass? In which case you can't really take anything in.
If you bump
you're always going to be at 100 miles per hour trying to get away from him.
It's a great point, that. And actually, one thing I was going to mention was how maybe there is an earlier precedent, but let's say if Mr. X in Resident Evil 2 was the first pursuing character that appeared in a video game... There's been so many that he's inspired, like Pyramid Head in Silent Hill 2. Yeah. Chris Walker in Outlast was another great example, I think.
Well, I think some of the horror games now, like, you know, the so-called walking sims and whatnot, that is basically the whole game is just...
Keeping away from a pursuing monster. Yeah. And there's been some really scary incarnations of that kind of what is now in effect a trope.
Yeah.
And it's interesting, when it has been effective... Lots of those examples are just scripted or very deliberately occasional encounters.
Yes.
If whoever it is there all the time, it could just get a bit annoying and boring.
They definitely need to
ration it
and pick their moments. It's a bit like Alien Isolation, which is a great game, but it can be quite an irritating experience, quite frustrating experience.
I agree with you about that.
So it's just, you know,
because they overdid
it.
That game
Mr.
overdid
X was
it.
Fine. I think Mr. X just about
got
had
it right.
Occasionally, it was just a little bit of annoying because I knew I could get away from him. I just needed to do something.
It felt like there were enough bits where he wasn't in the game, like when you were outside the police station.
Yeah.
And it felt like the game itself was short enough to that you didn't get bored.
Yeah.
Alien Isolation, we've talked about this before, felt like it went on for at least 5 hours too long as a game, especially when it only had this basically one trick, which was there's an alien, which was a brilliant alien.
Oh, yeah.
But you could, you know, Alien the movie is 2 hours long. It's not 15 hours long.
No.
Do you know what I mean?
So, anyway, a bit of food for thought there. Christ, we've... talked a lot about the first two games.
One thing we definitely need to cover is Resident Evil 4.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people...
Before we get to that, you had Resident Evil 0 also on the GameCube. Weirdly, the GameCube had like two exclusive Resident Evil games. Of course, they ended up coming on to other consoles. But Resident Evil 0, it was basically controlled two characters simultaneously.
Oh, yeah.
So you had these new different sort of puzzle elements.
I never played this one then.
It was quite good, but it was definitely we've seen it all now.
Yeah.
So that's all I'm going to say about it, really. I like Resident Evil Zero. There's a HD remake of it out on PS4.
But the gameplay had reached its kind of end of its lifespan.
You had to leave items for each other. There were like two player puzzles.
Yeah, okay.
You're on your own most of the time, but there were like a few player puzzles, like someone would have to go there, you'd have to go there, and you know, obviously you'd encounter zombies along the way. It was a decent enough game, but it definitely for me at the time felt like, okay, a bit like Resident Evil 3, although we had Code Veronica to come.
Yeah.
A bit like Resident Evil 3, it kind of felt like, right.
You're running out of ideas.
You're running out of ideas, it's getting a little bit convoluted.
Yeah.
I'm kind of done. Which is where Resident Evil 4 came in. Capcom obviously must have realised this.
Credit to them.
Because Resident Evil 4 is a completely redesigned...
So much innovation in that. Yeah. Like, you had the over-the-shoulder, wasn't completely new, but they used it to this brilliant effect where you had this kind of wobbly gun. So you were either running very slowly along or standing stock still, trying to aim your wobbly gun sight at these... The whole thing was quite slow-paced and methodical.
Yeah.
So you thought, oh, these zombies are really slow. I'll just... But they were on you really quickly if you didn't get that aim right and hit them in the face or shoot their legs out. The zombies themselves were new, were different.
Yeah, they were humans.
Yeah, they were like semi-human, like villages almost in some remote... Where was it set? Was it Mexico? Spain?
Do you know what? I can't
somewhere
remember.
In Europe. Yeah, it was set somewhere in some weird fictional...
You had sort of like medieval
European
castle there.
Yeah. And it had the... it really cranked up the kind of action element.
Without going too far,
Agreed.
I think it was... Yeah.
It was still a horror game.
It was still a horror game, yeah. It still had the item management. Yeah. And
there's the bit... A lot of people probably remember this fondly. There was that bit early on where you were sort of... You'd made it to this village. You're trying to figure out what the hell... I think the plot was that Leon, who by this point has gone from being like a rookie, wet behind the ears cop, he's now like the... Like a wisecracking CIA operative or whatever.
Yeah, well,
point.
Because obviously of the whole umbrella thing, they're investigating. You know, there's this whole biological
weapons division. He's been dispatched, and isn't it? He's trying to get the president's daughter back.
That's right. Yeah.
So yeah, the best guy they could find for the job is someone who was a rookie policeman about 5 years ago. Yeah. But anyway, but he was he had some funny lines though, didn't he? He'd learned a bit of like martial arts because he could. Spin kick zombies' heads off and suplex them and stuff. But yeah, you've made it into this village, and then there's like the bell rings.
That's right.
And all these scary villagers kind of. And it's a bit like they have like a bit of a deliverance vibe. Like there was these. Remember the most iconic enemy from Resident Evil 4 was the chainsaw wielding guy with a bag over his head.
Yeah.
Oh my god, getting chased around by him.
That was terrifying.
Yeah. And he took so many shots to kill as well.
And the merchant was great.
What are you buying?
You know, you could kill him.
You could, and then you wouldn't be able to. That's
buy
great.
Any guns ever again. So that was a bit silly.
Yeah, so it was Resident Evil 4 again, though. As much as I loved it when I played it, I've never played it since.
Interesting.
And that's nothing to do with... I thought it was brilliant.
Yeah.
But I've never played it since.
I'm exactly the same, but I tend to... I suppose it's more normal for me not to go... But I tend not to...
Well, it is now. It is now. I don't generally now, but I feel like at that time I probably still would have.
Maybe you were just too emotionally spent from all that survival horror.
But it was great, wasn't it, Resident Evil 4?
And it embraced all the B-movie plot stuff. You had the wisecracking hero, the ridiculous plot with the president's daughter, daft, monstrous villains.
But
brilliant.
Still scary.
But spot on, still scary. And then, we've touched on it already, the fifth one and sixth one were basically just stupid action games.
Well, this is the problem. It's how quickly things change, because Resident Evil 4 came along, and it, you know, to critical a lot of people argue that's the best Resident Evil, and you know, power to them. It's not my favourite, but I can understand why it would be.
Yeah.
So, isn't it amazing how quickly it went from being the best thing ever, this over-the-shoulder perspective, and you know, lots more enemies, to just being really shit? Resident Evil 5 was okay.
It had like a cooperative element, didn't it?
Yeah,
like
video games at this era went weirdly that everything had to be cooperative.
Dead Space 3.
Dead Space 3.
Shite, same
absolute
problem.
Absolute shit.
Yeah.
The whole point of it, which is maybe partly why Resident Evil 0 is not quite as good.
Yeah.
You know, you want to be, you're all alone.
Yeah, it's about isolation and terror.
Exactly.
Not you and your mate having fun shooting zombies.
Yeah.
Like, well, if you, okay, you might enjoy that, but in that case, fine, go and buy Resident Evil 6 then, or 5, whichever one it
was. Yeah, but, and in that instance, they hadn't fully gone the whole action route yet of Resident Evil 6, which we'll get to, but it was definitely heading that way.
Yeah.
And I actually remember some of the bosses at the end. I was actually, it wasn't fun, it was just annoying. It was like, for fuck's sake, another stage of this boss battle.
Yeah, it's like you go through all the, you know, the stages of grief when you buy something that you think is going to be good and you slowly come to terms with the fact that it's actually shit. Like, first you're in denial, then you're in, like, then you're angry, then you sort of like slowly acceptance, and then it's crap.
It wasn't great. It was okay. It wasn't. It's definitely not the worst Resident Evil game, because that is
undoubtedly six. So, just before I should, full disclosure, I have never played six, so I'm slagging it off based on what other people have said. So maybe I should not do that.
So six, then it's you've got three different. Basically, there's three different stories in six that make up the entire game. So you've got Leon's story, Leon's back. That one actually is probably the most kind of horror based. At first, it's because the graphics are really good in it, so it's quite creepy actually, the initial scenes. But even that gets a little bit too much. It's just sort of action-y. But that's probably the best of the three.
Okay.
Then you've got Chris's story, which is just full action game.
Testosterone fueled.
I always likened it. It was basically like, it felt like Gears of War, but without the actual good cover-based gunplay and without enough ammo.
Oh my God.
You had all these enemies you had to kill, but it was like survival horror.
Without the horror.
Ammo dumps. But you had to kill like shitloads of monsters. No. It was absolute shit. And then you've got Wesker's son, which again is just a complete action-packed
romp.
Yeah, you know, it's like watching an action movie, you know, like exploding helicopters you're jumping from. I can't remember exactly.
It's almost like they had a phase, and it's games like this are still being made, but there was a phase where it felt like every game was nearing this like event horizon of just becoming like a Fast and Furious movie.
Yeah,
because they seemed to have decided that's what the public wanted.
It was like Gears of War, and then suddenly everything had to be like
muscle band,
everything kind of had
shit,
to be like that
crap.
And the whole argument is that, well, you know, we need to sell more copies to just, you know, because games are so expensive to make these days. We need to appeal to more people. And
thankfully, game developers in the last 10 or so years seem to have realised that there is a market for games that make you feel completely emasculated, weak, powerless and terrified, which is how we like to feel, damn it.
So even though they kind of got it wrong with 5, they didn't learn from that and released 6, which, you know, isn't regarded as
a piece of trash. Yeah.
But in all fairness to Capcom, like they did before, they realised that things needed to be changed. And then you've got Resident Evil 7, which is a first-person survival horror game, which kind of set in like Louisiana, sort of hillbilly kind of derelict,
which is cool,
plantation.
Yeah,
sort of.
It's like a trapped in a
Texas Chainsaw.
Exactly. Yeah, deformed family cliche hillbilly kind of. Oh, mama, what's going on? Bring the chainsaw.
No, you
kind of
weren't
stuff.
A fan, though, were you?
So, couple of things at play here. One is they released that demo, didn't they?
Yes.
Which was hot on the heels of PT, the Silent Hill comeback demo that was then sadly cancelled. Which I've talked about before is brilliant.
Yeah.
This felt to me like a bit of a shameless cash-in by Capcom.
I agree. It did feel like they kind of copied that. Yeah,
but it had some good ideas. Like I like the bit where you put the video in the player and then play through the black and white footage of, and that was pretty scary, where the guy goes missing in the basement. But I was kind of, well, we'll see how this goes. Then my brother got it, and I played on it at his then house. And I think I did that. You know when you just, you play a game and you just really crap at it, and then you sulk a bit and like blame it on the gameplay mechanics, and you're like, oh, it's too slow. Oh, I don't like it.
Yeah.
Childish, pathetic. So I think I just, because I had this bad experience with it, I was a bit down on it. And I think because I'd played through Outlast and, you know, all the Silent Hills
a million
times.
There was a time actually where a lot of walking, like first person.
There were loads of them. Amnesia, all that stuff. Like these, like, oh, you've got, having complimented such games where it, you know, I'd had enough of stealth games. I'd had enough of hiding in the shadows while a scary monster walked past. So I think I just kind of wasn't in the mood for it, basically. So all that added up to me being like, oh, I'll get round to playing it one day. And then I just never have got round to it.
I think what I loved about it, first of all, I was able to play it in VR, which there was a couple of issues I had with the VR, but for the most part, it's one of the better VR games, I think. I think playing it for too long is not a great idea, though, because
you start killing people with a chainsaw in real life.
But also, what really surprised me is, even though it's a first-person game, doesn't look like a Resident Evil game at all, it actually plays like one. You're still finding keys, and had those Resident Evil tropes, which I wasn't expecting at all.
Okay,
so that was like a real pleasant surprise, and I do think it's genuinely really scary.
Oh, I'll have to get it then.
Like, each family member is kind of like its own little segment of the game.
Yeah, you have to sort of knock them off one by one, kind of thing. And I do love that trope of the horror, you know, the creepy hillbilly family that have got dark secrets, and, you know, like the House of a Thousand Corpses is one of my favourite films. So I should like this.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I think the ending wasn't the best. The end sort of section felt a little bit out of place.
Okay. Is it a lab again, by any chance?
But for the most part, no. I think it was great. I really enjoyed it. And yeah, I think it was a massive return to form. Albeit, it doesn't look like they're going to continue that? Going down that route. No, because at the moment,
it's all remakes.
Resident Evil 2 remake, Resident Evil 3 remake, with the Resident Evil 4 style over the shoulder. Yeah. Albeit done better, I think.
It's a funny old thing, the video game remakes fad. Is it a fad? Is it going to be here to stay? Because although we normally deride Hollywood for churning out remakes of films and not having original ideas, it's a bit different with games, because a big part of playing a game is the playing, not just the plot. Even for people like you and me who like plot-based games.
Yeah.
And obviously you can remake a game but give it different or improved gameplay.
Yes.
Obviously technology is better, so although it doesn't ought necessarily create a better game, it ought to, or the opportunity is there to make a better game. So I kind of feel like there's more justification for going back and mining the old classics.
Because it's kind of like, when you look at Final Fantasy VII, which is one of my favourite games of all time.
Me too, yeah.
You look at that, you play it now, and the graphics are actually really shit.
Yeah, they're awful, yeah.
I think it's still fine. Yeah, I
played through it recently, they were still good, but I know what you mean, though.
But you can see why, actually, you look at like the concept art, this is what they imagined it as, and this is what the technology allowed it to be.
Yeah.
So you can understand why, actually, the technology can make it look like how we always wanted it to look. So that kind of justifies it.
The thing I'm worried about, though, so in Resident Evil, partly because the originals had voice acting anyway, and partly because it doesn't matter if the voice acting's crap, because that's part of the whole B-movie fun. Yeah. Final Fantasy VII didn't have voice acting, and I'm reading, I haven't played that, I think you can get a demo I haven't played yet, but I'm told that one of the things people are kind of about is there's all this like annoying, whiny, wisecracky voice acting in it, and that could ruin it a bit.
I totally agree with you. That was the first thing when they announced it. I said that was my kind of biggest fear, is that the voice actor would ruin it. I'm probably going to play it with Japanese voice.
Yeah. Probably problem solved.
I think
then
that would sort it. Because
Sekiro is the same, that I played it in Japanese with subtitles, and then I tried later playing it in the American voice, and it's just cheesy and crap with the kind of corny sort of "I'll do anything for my country," and it wasn't. Yeah. I don't know.
A little sidebar there, wasn't it?
It was, but an important one.
An important one, yeah.
They should have hired us to do the voices. They should have had a Wigan, like a Wigan nemesis. Stars. Stars.
Sorry. You would be the baddie.
What would you be, like a Gloucester based? Which character would you want to play?
Like Barry, but like Gloucester Bay, like.
All right.
All right, you little prick. Get here, you little prick. What were you going to say?
Forgotten.
So we've covered all the main 9 entries. So now let's cover all of the spin-off.
Every movie.
So obviously ups and downs, but I think more ups than downs, definitely.
Yeah. And those.
And early, back on the up again.
You're right. Like, it's not. Unlike Silent Hill, which is a franchise that I love more than anything in the world, but is completely dead now.
Yeah. Although there are been a few rumours, haven't there?
There's some rumours, but I've just learned it's a bit I don't think I've ever mentioned this on the podcast before, like I'm a Newcastle United fan, weirdly, even though I'm not from there. Plastic Joe, because they were good when I was young, basically, Kevin Keegan's entertainers. And I'm just so used now to really credible rumours that we're going to get bought out by some billionaire, and then it just always, Amanda Staver, it always just crumbles away.
Yeah.
That's it. I'm completely insulating myself. I do not believe these rumours of a new Silent Hill game.
Probably for the best.
And I'm just going to ignore it.
Because it probably won't. Well, I don't know, actually.
Maybe they've seen what Capcom have done.
That's
maybe
the thing, yeah.
Tossers at Konami can see.
I did speak to Konami PR.
Were they basically evil?
No, no.
Were they like
and they did. They did sort of hint that they would be kind of revisiting more of their old.
Interesting.
Yeah. IPs.
Maybe they realised.
As you say, if you look at Capcom, that's a massive part of their business now, isn't it? Like, they're re-releasing all the Mega Man games. Yeah. What been doing that
Resident Evil years. Franchise, just when we were doing our bits of research before, 95 million copies of Resident Evil games they've shifted over the years.
That's incredible.
Now, Konami must look at that and think, we could have a bit of that.
Mind you, they've released about 95 million Resident Evil games, including spin-offs. On the subject of the spin-offs, most of them are crap.
I've probably never played any of them.
There's a couple of, some light gun Resident Evil games which are okay, as long as you take it for what it is, which is just a bit of like shallow shooting fun.
Yeah.
When they've tried to do like Resident Evil Mercenaries, which is basically the worst parts of Resident Evil, like that, the action parts, the sort of muscle bound, Navy SEAL, you know, it's crap. It's not what I want. It's not what you want. Yeah, yeah, it's not great.
Steer clear. And the movies. Again, the movies. I've only ever seen the first two.
I thought they were crap.
And they weren't very good.
They just didn't do what I wanted them to do.
The only good bit was, do you remember early on in the first one? There's like that cock trap laden corridor.
Yeah.
And the guy's doing all these like gymnastics to dodge the laser beams.
Yeah.
And he's rolling, jumping and flipping, and he manages to dodge them and survive, and they're all egging him on, go on, Chief! And then he turns, spins round, and the laser's coming again. And then it just splits into like a lattice.
That's right.
And just chops him into loads of tiny pieces. Like, and it falls to bits. Yeah. But yeah, it was all downhill from
there. They're just not Resident Evil.
They can't even decide what genre. Are they action films? Are they horror? They suffer from the same problems that the games went on to suffer from, but...
But yeah, a lot of the... You had Resident Evil Revelations.
Anything that's got Revelations in the title is immediately getting a deep, you know, markdown. Yeah. Is that the most unimaginative title
massively,
to give to a sequel?
In all fairness to the Revelations games, though, this was at a time when Resident Evil was at its lowest. So by association with Resident Evil 6, you know, releasing that same time frame, they're actually... okay, because they're actually trying to be kind of horror games.
What was the revelation in Resident Evil Revelations?
Load of old bollocks. That's what the revelation was.
The revelation was that they actually realised that the best technology in the games was whatever those item boxes were made out of. Because if you put an item in one, it would teleport into every other item box in the building.
But yeah, that's the problem with the Resident Evil. All that counter-biological
espionage,
terrorism
shit
is just boring.
Yeah.
I just wouldn't like to say...
Give us hillbillies.
Yeah.
And cowardice.
The underground lab stuff is fine, but yeah, just let's not storm a cruise ship because there's some biological weapon being used, fired on...
Let's not storm anything. Let's just skulk.
Yeah.
And like hide and tremble.
Yeah. So yeah, I think spin-off's largely pretty crap, but there you go.
Well, on which note... we have overrun my initial time estimate by a factor of about two, but hopefully it's been thoroughly entertaining.
Yeah.
Would you care to give us your sum up?
Well, as I say, Resident Evil, from a personal standpoint, very, you know, personally, very important game to me. I think it was sort of opened my eyes to a new type of gaming experience, storytelling in gaming, and you know, cinematics. I hate saying that, actually. Yeah, that's a really wanky thing to say, but yeah, just storytelling in gaming, and the fact that horror, you could do horror in games,
and it would be scary, probably.
It would
scary.
Be scary. Yeah. I just think for that, and maybe it wasn't the first of our horror game, but for that reason alone, personally, it deserves a place in the Hall of Pain. And also, I just think the first, you know, what, 60% of them are really good, really good.
Yeah.
And the rest of them are a bit meh.
And we've certainly allowed other things into the Hall of Pain on the basis that the good bits are
outweigh the bad. Yeah. Not the best summary, but I think I'm pretty exhausted about talking about it. But
I am going to surprise you now, because I have invited a special guest to come and help me adjudicate on this tough decision, and it is actually the Nemesis creature.
Oh, God.
Here he is. There you go.
Why am I looking?
Because he's there. That's why. Come here, sit down, Nemesis creature.
Stars.
Yeah, that's right. Stars. We'll find you some of them. Now then, do you think that Resident Evil deserves a place in the Hall of Pain?
Stars.
Oh, he can only say stars, can't he?
Say stars for yes.
What should he say for no?
No.
Say no. Okay, no for no. Stars for yes.
Yeah. Should it go in the Hall of Pain?
Stars.
It's in. There you go.
Well done.
Thank you, Nemesis creature. And hey, do you think we should? I'm a bit worried he might kill us. He's pretty scary looking.
He's fine.
Oh, he's getting. Oh, he's gone. He's gone through the door.
Oh,
I forgot
shit.
He could go through doors.
That's right.
Oh, well, we're lucky there. Lucky escape.
That's what makes him so terrifying.
So that Stars member you've got living as your lodger at the moment, he's probably gone off to kill them and drink their blood or something.
Why are you doing this?
Sorry, I'll end
it. So there you go.
Wanted to spice it up a bit. That's another entry to the Hall of Pain. Done, dusted, sorted.
Resident Evil.
That's more than enough.
I'm pleased. This, I think he deserves it.
Me too.
Yeah.
Me too.
I'm exhausted.
What we need is some way to end this suddenly. And I can't think.
Stars. Liam.
Oh, shit.
Bye.
See ya.
Thank you for listening, everybody. We recorded that episode weeks ago, and since then, the world's all gone a bit weird, as I'm sure you've noticed. So just wanted to wish everyone the very best of luck and hope you're all hanging in there in our strange, troubling social distancing times. We, from our next episode, will be attempting to do this remotely using the powers of the internet. So this, who knows, could be the last ever episode where me and Liam get together in physical reality. So hope you enjoyed it. Apologies also for the annoying microphone issues in the sort of last 10 or so minutes. I did my best to edit them out, but thought, may as well leave it in. You've made it that far. Usual post-show announcements apply. So not only a big thank you, but also just urging you to get in touch with us, really, on Twitter @dark_natter or on Instagram @darknatterpodcast. You can also contact us by email darknatterpodcast@gmail.com. Or you can have a look at my website, which is www.john-richter, that's JonRichter.com, where you can find me books and various other weird, dark stuff. I've actually got a new book out on May the 1st, but it's already available for pre-order. So if you have a look at the website, or just go to Amazon and search for either my name or the book title, which is London 2039 Auxiliary. It is a cyberpunk noir detective thriller set in a dystopian future vision of London, not entirely dissimilar to the one that we are all now living in. So hopefully that will ring true for a lot of you, and I would be honoured if you would check it out and click the pre-order links, with huge thanks to anyone that does so. I think that's it. But yes, see you all next time. Don't have nightmares, or if you insist on doing, then at least make sure they're inspirational, fun ones. Speak to you soon.